Part 2, Victims. Richard Mellory, November 30th, 1989. Richard Charles Mellory was a 51-year-old Floridian who owned an electronics repair shop in Clearwater. He was known to suffer from paranoia and frequently turned to alcohol and sex to numb himself, mostly using the services of sex workers for some relief. In 1957, when he was 19 years old, he attempted to sexually assault a woman in Rockville, Maryland, which earned him a 10-year prison sentence at Patuxent Prison and a spot on the sex offenders database. He was described as an impulsive and explosive individual who will get into serious difficulty, most likely of a sexual nature. Because of his emotional disturbance and his poor control of his sexual impulses, he could present a potential danger to his environment in the future. His former girlfriend, Jackie Davis, described him as a violent partner who drank too much, indulged in pornography, and had previously been in therapy for sexual dysfunction. She said that he was similarly unstable in his business, often disappearing for a few days at a time, and receiving plenty of negative reviews and angry letters from disappointed customers. He was also in major debt and facing problems with the IRS, but still spending money on getting his sexual desires met outside of the relationship. On November 30th, 1989, the same day that he had met Eileen, Mellory had paid two exotic dancers, Chastity Lee Marcus and her friend Danielle, from Tampa Bay to satisfy him. His financial problems meant that he had to pay for their services by offering them $600 worth of electronics equipment, including a 19-inch color TV and a video cassette recorder. It is believed that Chastity was the last person to see Mellory alive before he had picked up Eileen on the I-75, still looking for sexual satisfaction. She described him as a drinking and partying man, and that he thought nothing of paying hundreds of dollars worth of equipment to have sex with two women at one time. His sexual needs were clearly his highest priority. He picked Eileen up in the early hours of the morning in his 1977 Cadillac near Tampa under a bridge and offered her a drink of vodka and orange juice. He had been smoking a joint and joined her in drinking as they drove around until they were both feeling the buzz. They spent approximately 5 hours together, drinking, talking, and enjoying each other's company until Eileen eventually told him that she was a prostitute and had a girlfriend. He had told her about his failing love life, bragged about owning a video store, and asked if she knew any woman who wanted to be in pornographic films. They drove to an isolated area near Ormond Beach, and around 5 a.m. he asked, "So, do you want to make your money now?" And then immediately started kissing her and engaging in sexual activity with her. She said, "Wait a minute, you know, get cool. You don't have to get rough, you know, let's have fun." She began to undress, but got agitated when she noticed that he was not removing his pants. He admitted that he did not have the money to pay for his services, so she started getting dressed again and declined any sexual interaction with him, which infuriated him. He became violently enraged and put a cord around her neck, tied her hands to his steering wheel, and raped her, anally and then vaginally. He grabbed a Vaseline bottle filled with rubbing alcohol to clean the blood off his penis and then squirted it into her, which she said hurt like hell because she was all torn up. "I'm saving your eyes for the grand finale," she recalled him saying, and at that point she realized that she would have to fight for her life. Mellory exited the car and sat on the hood of his car smoking pot and listening to music for approximately 1 hour, leaving Eileen tied to the steering wheel, cold and in the nude as she struggled to get free. In her trial, her defense attorney asked, "Were you saying anything to him at that point?" And Eileen answered, "No, I was crying my brains out." Eventually, she managed to free her hands, so she got up and spat in his face. He said, "You're a dead bitch," before lunging towards her and getting back in the car. She grabbed her bag, got hold of her pistol, and shot at him 3 times. With one bullet piercing into his right arm and the other into his chest, left lung. He crawled out of the car and onto the ground as she exited the car and moved towards him, shutting his door as she got to him, and then shot at him 2 times more, which killed him. She explained, "Then I thought to myself, well, This dirty bastard deserves to die anyway because of what he was trying to do to me. We struggled. I reached for my gun. I shot him. I scrambled to cover the shooting because I didn't think the police would believe I killed him in self-defense. Once she knew he was dead, Eileen turned his pockets inside out to look for his car keys, and then drove home with his car, where she told Tyria that they would need to move immediately. At the time, they had been staying at the Ocean Shores Motel, and Eileen suggested they move to Burley Avenue in Holly Hill, which was only 4 miles down the road. She told Ty that she was just borrowing the car from a friend, and that she would drop it off at John Anderson Drive, Ormond Beach, when they were done moving all of their stuff, which she did, after getting it washed inside and out. On December 1st, 1989, while they were watching TV, Eileen drunkenly told Ty that she had shot and killed a man that day. Ty knew that she carried a gun for protection, and that she had been verbally and sexually assaulted in her line of work in the past, but didn't want to know the details of his murder because she did not ever want to be seen as an accessory to it. Eileen sorted out the items that she had stolen from Mallory at home, pawning some off and storing some in a storage unit she was renting at Daytona Beach. A few days later, Mallory's abandoned car was discovered by the police in a wooded area near Ormond Beach on John Anderson Drive, and he was filed as a missing person. At the scene, they found an empty beer bottle, a half-empty quart bottle of vodka, a wire coat hanger, and 2 driver's licenses, both belonging to Mallory. But there was no sign of him, and no explanation for what may have happened to him. On December 13, 1989, his body was discovered by 2 young scrap metal scavengers along a dirt road near Ormond Beach. He was covered with a rubber-backed carpet runner, and was wearing his pants with his belt buckled, zipper up, and pockets turned inside out. They called the police, who started the investigation into his murder by running his fingerprints, which confirmed his identity and that he was the owner of the abandoned car. His autopsy, which was performed by Dr. Botting in Volusia County, revealed a blood alcohol level of 0.05. 0.08 is where one would be considered too drunk to drive. 2 bullets to his left lung had caused the hemorrhaging which killed him, while 1 went through his right arm and 1 was found rolling around freely in the body bag once he had been collected. The question then was, who had murdered him and why? Chastity, the exotic dancer who he had seen on the same day, initially told her boyfriend in a fit of rage that she was the one who had killed him. Her boyfriend approached the police, who then interviewed her, only to find out that her statements were just exaggerations made as a verbal threat to her boyfriend. Mallory's case became cold. It was when they discovered the receipt with Eileen's thumbprint on it at a local pawn shop, with the confirmation that she had pawned off some of the items that were missing from his car, that they knew who they were looking for, even though she was using several aliases to cover her tracks. Once she had been arrested, they also found his camera and a radar detector unit in the storage unit she had rented at Jack's Mini Warehouses in Daytona Beach. She was arrested on January 9, 1991, and with the help of her partner, Ty, the police were able to track down her murder weapon, which she had tossed into a lake near the Fairview Inn, a motel where they were staying at the time. On January 16, 1991, Eileen confessed to all the murders with the police, after being pushed to do so from Tyria, and on January 27, 1992, she was convicted of Mallory's murder. In court, when asked by the prosecutor whether she intended to kill Mallory when she shot him, she said, "I didn't want to. I had no choice." She was sentenced to death for his murder on January 31, 1992, and executed for it on October 9, 2002. Mallory's remains were cremated, and his ashes were given to a family member. Rest in peace, Richard Charles Mallory, 18th of October 1938 to the 30th of November 1989, age 51. David Spears, May 19th, 1990. David Andrew Spears was a 47-year-old construction worker for United Concrete Incorporated, born in Kentucky, and living in Sarasota, Florida, when he went missing on May 19, 1990. He had been married for 20 years and had 3 children, but got divorced in 1984 because of his alcohol dependence. He still took care of his family financially and frequently visited the home in Winter Garden. People who knew him described him as a good-natured and honest person and placed doubt on Eileen's claims that he wanted to harm her. His ex-wife, Ima Spears, had agreed to meet up with him on May 19, 1990, so that they could go and buy their 18-year-old daughter, Diana, a birthday gift together. His sons, Jeff and David, were in their early 20s at the time. Jeff, who worked at the same construction site, said that his father had left around noon on May 19th and was eager to get home to meet his ex-wife. When he did not show up, Ima panicked, saying, "When he said he would be home, he always came home." He was reported as a missing person, and the search for him began. On June 1st, 1990, the same day that his daughter graduated from West Orange High School, his naked, except for his hat and socks, decomposing body was found by a surveyor in the remote woods of southwest Citrus County, Florida, along the US 19 route and approximately 70 miles northwest of his Winter Garden home. He had been shot 6 times in the torso with a .22 caliber pistol, and evidence showed that he was stripped naked post-mortem. On June 7th, his family received the devastating news that the body belonged to him. His truck was found shortly afterward, abandoned along the I-75 near Eileen's home, with a flat tire, all the doors unlocked, the license plate missing, and used condoms inside. His clothing, toolbox, ceramic panther, and keys were missing. In her videotape confession, Eileen told investigators, "If we did what we agreed to do, he would have gone his way and I would have gone my way." While she said that she only attacked those she felt threatened by, the police suspected that in his case, she attacked him because he did not pay for what she had offered. Without her confession, it would have been challenging to charge her with a crime, even though the gun helped to tie the crimes together. On March 31, 1992, Eileen pled no contest to 3 murders, and on May 15th, she received 3 additional death sentences, one of which was for the murder of David Spears. David's father had died in 1971, his brother, a U.S. Army veteran, in 1997, his mother in 2002, and his sister in 2003. His family had all died relatively young and were all buried in Kentucky. He was buried in Winter Garden Cemetery in Winter Garden, Orange County, Florida. Ima will be buried next to him when she passes away, with her gravestone already proudly standing next to his. Rest in peace, David Andrew Spears. 20th of July, 1942, to the 19th of May, 1990. Age 47. Charles Carskadden, June 3, 1990. Charles Edmund Carskadden, Jr., who went by the nickname Chuck, was a 40-year-old truck driver and part-time rodeo worker from Boonville, Missouri, who had planned to take a trip to Tampa, Florida in the summer of 1990 to see his girlfriend Peggy Hood and have a vacation before starting a new job as a press operator back home. At the time, he was staying with his mother, Florence, in Prairie, Missouri. May 31st was the last time that she saw her son alive. He was cruising in his brown Cadillac on the 1,000-plus-mile journey southward, eventually intercepting the I-75 on May 31st, 1990, where he would find Eileen Muñoz standing on the side of the road in the humid atmosphere with her thumb in the air. On June 6th, 1990, his body was found in a secluded area in Wesley Chapel, Pasco County, Florida, just 30 miles from his intended destination. He had 8 visible bullet wounds, and it was later confirmed that he was shot 9 times with a .22 caliber pistol in the chest and upper abdomen. His remains, which had badly decomposed in the hot Florida sun, were found covered in a sea green electric blanket and topped with tall grass that had been uprooted and scattered over him. On June 7th, his abandoned car was found by highway patrol at the interstate in Marion County, where it was red-tagged. On June 13th, it was towed to a junkyard until the sheriff's office retrieved it. Witnesses had come forward to say that they had seen Eileen in possession of the car between June 1st and June 6th. His body was so badly decomposed that he could not be identified by weight, height, or description. His left thumb was the only finger that still offered a fingerprint, which helped to identify him. His mother had also called the police when the news broke that bodies were being discovered scattered throughout Florida, especially after his abandoned car had been found, which she immediately recognized as her son's. Once Eileen had been arrested on January 9th, 1991, investigators found an Indian blanket belonging to Karskadon in the storage unit that she had been renting, along with other victims' belongings. She had also pawned off his .45-caliber automatic pistol at Lebosca Investments pawn shop, which was later traced to her through fingerprint matches and confirmed as a match of the gun that he had bought in Kentucky. Eileen confessed to his murder in a videotaped interview with the police, admitting that she had shot him. In June of 1992, she pled no contest to being charged with his murder, receiving a fifth death sentence by November of the same year. He was buried back home in Walnut Grove Cemetery in Boonville, Cooper County, Missouri, where his father, a U.S. Army veteran, had been buried, and where his mother was also buried in 2008. Rest in peace, Charles Edmund Karskadon Jr., 12th of November, 1949, to the 3rd of June, 1990, age 40. Peter Seams, June 7th, 1990. Peter Abraham Seams was a 65-year-old retired merchant marine who was spending most of his time dedicated to an evangelical Christian outreach program called Christ is the Answer in Florida when he went missing. Friends and family described him as an easygoing, deeply religious gentleman. His German wife, Ursula, who he had been married to for 25 years, and one of his sons had been traveling in Europe at the time of his disappearance. On June 7th, 1990, he departed from his home in Jupiter, Florida, and planned to travel northwestbound to Arkansas to visit his son, then to New Jersey to visit his mother, and then to Alabama to visit his missionary friends. On June 22nd, he was reported missing. On July 4th, his wrecked and abandoned four-door gray 1988 Pontiac Sunbird was found along State Road 315 in Orange Springs, Florida, with the windows smashed and the license plate missing. Witnesses came forward to offer physical descriptions of the two women seen driving, crashing, and abandoning the car, which had been Eileen and Tyria. One woman, Rhonda Bailey, watched the scene unfold from her porch and confirmed that Ty was the one who was driving the car at the time. As soon as they had exited and crashed the car, she said they were arguing with each other and throwing beer cans into the surrounding woods. Tragically, Seams' body has never been found. He was 5'7", weighed 160 pounds, and had gray hair with brown eyes. Police found a palm print on the interior door handle, which helped them to connect Wuornos to the crime. Bloodstains were also found on the seats and door handle. In her confession, she said that she had dumped his body in Georgia, but could not remember exactly where, likely because she was too drunk. He was survived by his wife and two sons, with one of his sons, Lenny Seams, commenting about Wuornos' notoriety following her arrest. "I've tried not to think about it too much. I just think it's sick and twisted," he said. Eileen told Gerardo Rivera in an interview while she was in prison that Seams had picked her up while she was hitchhiking, and as they were driving, she had told him that she was a prostitute. He asked how much she would charge for a blowjob, and they had come to an agreement of $30. According to her, he did not want to pay her the money when she was done, which made her very angry. Because his body was never found, Eileen was not charged with his murder. He is still listed as a missing person in the state of Florida. When Geraldo asked her if she really found it necessary to kill him, she at first said, "The way that he made me so mad at the time and what he was doing at the time, yes." When he pressed her to consider her newfound faith, she said that if she could turn back the hands of time, he would be one of the victims that she would not kill. "I wish he would have told me he was a missionary. He did not tell me he was a missionary," she said. She did not know how many times she shot him, but remembered that she shot him in the torso. And without a body, nobody has ever known. His son testified in court, saying that his father always carried stacks of Bibles with him to hand out on his travels. One of these Bibles was, in fact, found in Eileen's storage unit in Daytona Beach. His sister, Marjorie, said, "It's hard to bear, but at least we know what happened to him." His wife passed away in 2014 and was buried in Siloam Springs, Benton County, Arkansas, tragically, without ever being able to put him to rest. Rest in peace, Peter Abraham Siems, 21st of May, 1925, to the 7th of June, 1990, age 65. Troy Buress, August 4th, 1990. Troy Eugene Buress was a 50-year-old salesman who was originally from Tennessee and living in Ocala, Marion County, Florida, where he worked for Gilchrist Sausages. On July 31, 1990, he was on a delivery trip to Florida when he encountered Eileen Wuornos hitchhiking along the road. He picked her up and was never seen alive again. At the end of the day, when he hadn't returned, his manager called around to try to get a hold of him, only to find out that he hadn't made his deliveries for the day. At 2 a.m. on August 1st, his wife reported him missing, and at 4 a.m., his abandoned truck was found 20 miles east of Ocala, on the shoulder of US 19, also known as State Road 19. There was no sign of Buress or his keys, even though all the doors had been left unlocked. 5 days later, on August 4th, 1990, his body was found on a dirt road in the Ocala National Forest along the US 19 in Marion County, Florida. A family had gone picnicking and hiking and stumbled on his badly decomposing remains. While the forest is not exclusively associated with crime more than any other location in the world, it does hold some grisly memories where drifters, drug addicts, and fugitives have been known to hide out. Several people have gone missing there, have taken their own lives there, or have been found dead and unidentified. Serial killer Gerard Schaefer confessed to abducting and murdering two women from the forest in 1966. For Eileen, it was the perfect location to hide her fifth victim. If all went well, he would be too badly decomposed by the time he was discovered, or he would never be found. Buress was first identified by his wife, who confirmed that the ring he was wearing was his wedding band. He was later identified through dental records. His wallet and credit card had been thrown into the woods, and his clipboard and receipts were found in proximity to his body. A bank bag with $290 in cash was missing and never recovered. He was shot twice, once in the chest and once in the back. In Eileen's confession, she told the police that he had picked her up while she was hitchhiking and proposed that they have sex, offering her $10. She was so offended that she angrily shot him, robbed him, and made sure to drag him away from his truck. In an interview in jail with Geraldo Rivera, she said that he was a dangerous man who had several knives, including a camouflage knife and a switchblade knife, and that he had threatened to rape her when they were sitting under a blanket in front of his truck. On March 31, 1992, Eileen pleaded no contest to his murder, for which she received a death sentence on May 15, 1992. Leading up to her execution, Troy's sister, Lita Preta, said, "I want to know. She's absolutely gone. I would have liked to see her get the electric chair. My brother didn't go to sleep. He was shot more than once." When asked how she was coping with the loss of her brother, she said, "I was absolutely devastated. I still am. He was more than a brother. He was my best friend. I miss him so much." Troy was buried in Good Shepherd Memorial Gardens in Ocala, Marion County, Florida. Rest in peace, Troy Eugene Buress, 28th of January, 1940, to the 4th of August, 1990, age 50. Charles Humphreys, September 12, 1990. Charles Richard Dick Humphreys was a 56-year-old retired U.S. Air Force major, former chief of police, and the former CPS, Child Protective Services, investigator when he went missing on September 11, 1990. He had been driving a blue 1985 Oldsmobile Firenza and was last seen alive at the Journey's End Motel in Wildwood, Sumter County, Florida. He had been traveling alone on the Interstate 95 when he stopped to pick up Eileen, which was the last time that he was ever seen alive. His family described him as a family man who was well respected amongst his colleagues at work. On September the 12th, his fully clothed body was found in a remote area in Marion County. He had been shot 6 times in the head and torso. His abandoned car was found near a gas station in Suwanee County, which was approximately 100 miles north of where his body was found. In an interview with Geraldo Rivera, Eileen said, "Oh God, Humphreys, that creep told me that he was a cop for Wildwood and showed me his badge. We struggled with a gun. I mean, when I shot him first, when he was coming at me with the handcuffs and a billy club, he put me in the back seat, shut the door, and told me, 'Wait right there, I'll be right back.' And that's when I shot him in the shoulder." She said that he was infuriated when she had shot him, and after getting up from the ground, was charging towards her saying, "You bitch," when she shot him 3 or 4 more times. It's interesting that Eileen was not afraid of the repercussions of shooting a police officer. His daughter, Terry Humphreys Slay, was interviewed in Geraldo's show, where she expressed her disbelief in anything that Wernos had to say about her father. When asked whether she thought that her father's killer deserved to be executed in the electric chair or not, she said, "Absolutely, absolutely." His wife, Shirley Humphreys, reported that the autopsy showed that no semen was found anywhere near her husband's body or the crime scene, casting doubt on Eileen's need to defend herself from being beaten or raped. Interestingly, surveillance footage showed that Eileen and Tyria were at a convenience store at the same time as Humphreys, which a receipt in his car was able to verify. The briefcase that Tyria had in her possession was confirmed as Humphreys and was unlocked with the first 6 digits of his social security number. How much or little Tyria was involved in his murder or any other victims remains a mystery. He was buried in Florida National Cemetery in Bushnell, Sumter County, Florida. His wife, who passed away 5 years later, was buried next to him. Rest in peace, Shirley C. Humphreys, 1934 to 1995, age 61, and Charles Richard Humphreys, 15th of December, 1933, to the 12th of September, 1990, age 56. Walter Gino Antonio, November 19, 1990. Walter Gino Antonio was a 61-year-old Italian native who had served in the U.S. Army, volunteered as a firefighter in Brevard County, Florida, and was a member of the local Moose Club, Merritt Island Moose Lodge, was a reserve policeman, and was a trucker and security guard when he went missing on November 18, 1990. He was traveling alone from his home in Cocoa, Florida, to Birmingham, Alabama, and was completely sober when he encountered Eileen hitchhiking on the road. On November 19th, the police found Antonio's partially nude body in a remote area in Dixie County. Amongst other things, his dentures were missing. The logging road where he was discarded was surrounded by nature, and there was no sight of any houses for miles. He had been shot 4 times, 3 times in the back and 1 in the head. His abandoned car was found on November 24, 1990, in Brevard County. When Eileen was arrested, during her confession to the police, she said that Antonio refused to pay her for her sexual services, telling her that he was a police officer, which angered her to the point of pulling out her gun and struggling with him until he was shot. Another police officer with a badge in the bag, Eileen really did not like cops. When he tried to escape his truck and run away, she shot him 2 more in the back and 1 in the head. According to investigators, Eileen justified her crimes by believing that older men did not have mothers or parents that would miss them, which left her feeling remorseless for their murder. In February of 1993, she pleaded guilty to the murder of Antonio, receiving her sixth and final death sentence in a jury vote of 7-5. Antonia was survived by his fiancée, Eileen Berry, who died in 2013 and was buried next to him, his mother, Edna Jackson, and his four sisters. He was buried in Brevard Memorial Park, Cocoa, Brevard County, Florida. Rest in peace, Walter Gino Antonio, 22nd of November, 1928, to the 19th of November, 1990. Age, 61.